This is Bill Ryan from Project Camelot, and it is Wednesday, the 8th of July, 2009. And I'm here in Zurich, Switzerland, with Dr. Brian O'Leary, who flew in a couple of days ago, and it's a great delight to be with him again. We last saw him in Vilcabamba, Ecuador, in January, which is where he hails from. And one of the things we did a couple of days ago was we had the great pleasure, well, I had the great pleasure, as a semi-retired mountaineer, of accompanying Brian to a very special mountain which you last saw quite a long time ago.
The Matterhorn, yes. And this is 47 years later, and it is rather daunting to see that mountain enshrouded in clouds and to think that, gee, I did that when I was young and foolish, 22 years old. I didn't do it this time. Now that I'm about 70.
It's a very impressive mountain, and I'm sure in the last 47 years it hasn't changed a bit. You and I have probably changed quite a lot in the last 47 years, and so has Zermatt, which was a little village full of goat herders and little antique barns that were really used for their design purpose. And we were talking about the March of Progress, which was a very interesting subject, considering the accelerating pace of change and development. And we were talking, weren't we, about where is this march marching towards? And we had an interesting conversation.
Yes, there are many things happening, of course, and there is a general cultural bias towards business as usual. But the point is here, and my passion in recent years has been to create a sustainable future for humankind and nature. As we all know, the Earth is getting raped, and that there are some problems that are worse than others. And the one that I particularly have been focusing on is energy. We all realize that the overuse of oil and coal and natural gas has really put us in a pickle here. And the kinds of solutions that the mainstream have been considering are rather passé. Solar, wind, biofuels, each one of them have their own problems. They require very high capital costs. Biofuels, you have to use a lot of land to grow the corn that from which you get ethanol. For example, one sports utility vehicle tankful of biofuels could feed a hungry person for 1 year. So that's not in our future either. Or a solar or wind economy is going to cost tens of trillions of dollars of capital cost just to get such an economy going. And so where my focus has been is on so-called free energy, energy from the vacuum of space or cold fusion. These are all so-called over-unity devices that have been experimentally shown to be very real. I've traveled the world, visited many of these researchers myself, and can vouch for the fact that these technologies are very real, if only they were properly developed. Unfortunately, they've been suppressed. Many of the researchers in this field have been assassinated and threatened. It's just too much, too soon for the powers that be. And so I've made it a livelihood to not only vouch for the technology and to see that there are many, many possibilities, any one or some of which could solve the energy crisis once and for all, that could give us a very bright and abundant future where we wouldn't have to pay for our energy and we wouldn't have to pollute with it, and where we could actually, for example, desalinate part of the oceans and have a fresh water supply that's pure and clean. These are all possibilities. And then we could truly have a sustainable future for humankind, and the Earth will thank us for it.
And this is going to be the theme of your presentation at this weekend's conference. Would you want to say anything about that for people who are either looking forward to the conference or wondering whether to attend or wondering which workshop to attend? Because you're also giving a personalized workshop on the Sunday morning, where people get a chance to really dialogue with you about this.
That's right, Bill. That's the major thrust of my talk will be on the possibility of free energy and also on the importance of all of us becoming more aware of what these possibilities are, because most people haven't even heard of it. And it's not an outlandish possibility. In fact, it's one that I personally feel, given my own scientific background, I do have a PhD in astronomy and physics and was on the physics faculty at Princeton University for many years. And so I take this possibility very, very seriously. And so I think the people need to realize that, number one, it is technically possible. And number two, it is going to be a very disruptive thing in a positive way, that that the whole multi-trillion dollar hydrocarbon energy economy will be supplanted one day by these new technologies. But that the oil companies, the powers that be, don't want this to happen because it would cut into their profits, into their power. And so we'll be talking about that too. I've had many, many years of metaphysical exploration, which I think will contribute to our understanding of free energy and of consciousness. I'll talk about that too, about how important it is for all of us to be aware that we can heal ourselves, we can heal the planet through combined positive intention, and we can literally change the material world in positive ways through the technologies of a new science that's longing to be born, that's waiting in the wings for its cultural opportunity. And these things can happen regardless of what scenarios we might want to conjure up for ET contact and other very important aspects as well.
Talking about ET contact, we were told by Dr. Pete Peterson, who we met about 10 days ago, that he had heard on good authority that there was a plan for President Obama to make an announcement revealing the reality of contact with extraterrestrial races, possibly towards the end of this year. Now, if this report is accurate, this is a plan, and we don't necessarily know that it's going to happen, and it could be that plans like this have been made in the past and then put back for a variety of reasons. But would you see this as an opportunity in any way to help usher in other new paradigms other than the reality of extraterrestrial civilizations?
Absolutely, Bill. I'm all in favor of revealing the secrets. There's been secrecy for too long. There's been cover-ups of UFO and ET information for a long, long time, ever since the Roswell incident in 1947. We've been in a situation now where there's been a very powerful secrecy apparatus, as you know, that has been keeping the public away from new opportunities, from even reverse engineering of some of the ET technologies, the use of anti-gravity technology, which is, I would consider, a kissing cousin to free energy. It's the use of extracting energy from the vacuum to be able to go from A to B in an instant, or our ability to tap into the consciousness of the so-called zero point or the huge energy field of the vacuum. These are all concepts that are waiting for us to understand. I think that we are ready as a world community to understand and to embrace these technologies with one caveat, and that is that they be responsibly managed. And we don't want Dick Cheney running this one too. We need to mature as a species. We don't have much time left, I don't think. And I would hope that Mr. Obama, and I realize he's under a lot of pressure to maintain the status quo, to bail out the big banks, to continue running the military-industrial complex, to continue with polluting energy. But all of these things are just so obviously crying out to be understood, to be embraced, to create a sustainable future for humankind.
It's interesting, when you said there's not a lot of time left, one of the things that Dr. Peterson shared with us is that he presented a very interesting number. He said that his understanding was that we had about 10 months before things became irreversible. I don't know exactly what that's measuring or where that number comes from, but it's very compelling, and it's a very good reason to take this huge step into a new way of thinking. And one thing that it occurs to me, of course, is that if we are presented with the reality of ET visitation, these guys didn't come here from other planets or maybe even from other times in a dirty fuel-burning rocket ship. They came here using technology that we don't know about and we don't certainly have access to in the public domain. And there's just this hope, and this is where my hope is, that there's a real opportunity here to bring some of this stuff out in the open. And if so, it's interesting that you refer to being on the physics faculty at Princeton for a number of years, but not all of your colleagues shared your own open-minded view about these potential technologies.
Absolutely. And my path was like a lot of scientists' pathways, which is that when I was at Princeton, there were 40 of us on the faculty. Six of us were Nobel laureates. We were all men. And the most common topic of discussion when we got together socially was how ridiculous claims to the paranormal were. And in 1979, I started to have paranormal experiences. So I had a choice to make, which was to either pretend that the paranormal didn't exist and go on with my secure career on the faculty of Princeton, or to break out of the box. Well, I decided to break out. And one of my colleagues one time said, "Brian, don't be so open-minded that your brains will spill out." But what I discovered on this pathway is the conservative bias of skeptical scientists. The fact that they're living in the past, they're over-specialized, and they have a knee-jerk negative reaction to anything smacking of a new paradigm. My own journey, Bill, which really, in a sense, began at Princeton when I began to see that the paranormal was very real and that these things were not only open to my experience, but they also were open to scientific investigation using scientific methods. And gradually, I would come out of the box of a materialistic Western science where, in fact, science itself was leading to many of these phenomena outside the box, such as remote viewing, the UFO-ET phenomenon, free energy, the existence of consciousness and healing, our ability to manipulate the material world from a point of view, a higher point of view, if you will. All of these different approaches to science, to my way of thinking, were just ready to be used and to clean the planet. So bit by bit, I began to embrace these new sciences and technologies.
There's a wonderful catchphrase that I think you coined for a conference that you held at the back end of last year in Ecuador, which was crisis and opportunity. And these two go hand in hand in many ways. It would be lovely to think that the human race can actually get it together, and that our leaders, whatever constraints they may feel are on them, can do the right thing and place this information and these technologies in the hands of good people who will be able to pick up this ball and run with it. Because from your own experience, even though there are a lot of people in science faculties all over the world who have a degree of skepticism and even cynicism, but you would probably agree that a lot of them are good people, and if they're faced with evidence and facts, data in front of them, then they're going to pick up this ball and run with it. Would you agree with that?
Well, that's possible, Bill. I wouldn't count on it. Max Planck one time said that science progresses between funerals. If they won't do it, then some of us have to pick up the slack. Some of us who are, by the way, trained as scientists. The institutionalization of science is so retrogressive that I don't know whether these people will pick up the slack, but certainly to me it's very clear, regardless of what one's background is or whether one is currently accepted in a culture as being the final authority on what reality is, reality itself is being torn apart, torn asunder by a whole new way of looking at things. There's a whole new paradigm of science that's longing to be born. And it's going to be very different from the existing science. Physics itself is being torn asunder by such things as the resolution of the apparent paradoxes of quantum physics through consciousness, through the fact that that particles can be waves and that observers can influence the property of the observed, that physical reality is really a derivative reality, that the real reality is much more fundamental, and the cause and effect work on a very, very different level than we've been led to believe. And it's actually very good news, because the very technologies that will come out of this, such as free energy or the zero-point energy or cold fusion, are the very technologies that we can use, even in the near term, to solve the problems of unsustainability on the Earth. And we're going to have to step outside the box. In a sense, we have very little choice. And the timeline could be 10 months, it could be 10 years. We get different timelines from different people, but the timeline is so urgent that we're going to have to accelerate this process of change. So in a way, I like the concept of crisis and opportunity, that a crisis such as what we have right now on the Earth does present opportunities, but also the title of the conference coming up here in Zurich, which is A New World, if you're ready for it. And we're going to have to be ready for a new world. And exactly what that new world is, we're not exactly sure. But the piece that I bring to the table, and also the subject of my most recent books, is a topic of, well, what can we as humans do? What kind of energy sources can we develop to have a really truly clean, cheap, safe, publicly transparent series of energy sources? How are we going to be able to responsibly implement these things? How are we going to be able to supplant the current industrial system, which is based very much on greed and fear rather than on opportunity? So the very first step that we need to take, and that's why I'm so happy to be here to present at this conference, is to describe what such a new world might look like, and to describe ways in which, well, we sure as heck are going to have to be ready for it, even though it might not resemble the world that we assumed always existed. We're going to have to prepare ourselves, and we're going to have the courage to look at things that we haven't normally looked at, that business as usual is not the way this is going to be working out.
I see you as a visionary, as well as a physicist, a scientist, and a wonderfully articulate presenter of everything that you believe in. And what I want to create here as an opportunity is that you can pass on this torch of your vision, maybe to some of the younger people who will pick this up. They must pick this up on behalf of the human race and make this work, even if Max Planck was right, that science progresses in funerals, as it were, that we have to wait for the old guard to die off before the new guard can take their place. Maybe that new guard is ready and waiting.
We hope so, Bill. Yeah, and I really think that's very important. You know, in a sense, this trip we're taking, and we don't take very many trips now. We generally have conferences and receive people in Ecuador. But this trip I see has a special urgency. I feel compelled to want to pass on the torch, that acting as if this might be our last trip. I hope it isn't. But it is true that younger people are going to need to become aware much more quickly than science has progressed in the past. We don't have the luxury of time this time. We don't have 10, 20, 30 years to wait until the younger people ascend to their positions of institutional power and influence, because the problems are so severe. The Earth can't wait for us to continue messing it up. We can't implement solutions the kind that we read about in the newspapers, such as carbon cap and trading, which basically give the elite the right to pollute where the rest of us can't or shouldn't pollute as much. We're going to have to change all this. And so the vision that I have and that some of the other speakers have will be to cause people to think about these things, research them on the internet, become activists, play a role in this change that is inevitable.
That's a wonderful summary. Brian, thank you so much. If you're listening to this before the weekend of the 10th to the 12th of July, 2009, then see if you can get yourself to Zurich and you'll be able to meet Brian in person. There's a lot of wonderful international networking happening. We've got visitors from 28 different countries, including Ecuador, where Brian hails from. And we think it'll be quite an event. And the theme of the conference, A New World If You Can Take It, this is exactly what this is all about. And we hope to see you there. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.